just a reading, first of all, taken from Jonah chapter 1, starting at verse 17. But the Lord provided a great fish to swallow Jonah, and Jonah was inside the fish 3 days and three nights. From inside the fish, Jonah prayed to the Lord his God. He said, "In my distress I called to the Lord, and he answered me. From the depths of the grave I called for help, and you listened to my cry. You hurled me into the deep, into the very heart of the seas, and the currents swirled about me. All your waves and breakers swept over me. I said, 'I have been banished from your sight, yet I will look again towards your holy temple.' The engulfing waters threatened me, and the deep surrounded me. Seaweed was wrapped around my head. To the roots of the mountains I sank down. The earth beneath barred me in forever. But you brought my life up from the pit, O Lord my God. When my life was ebbing away, I remembered you, Lord, and my prayer rose to you, to your holy temple. Those who cling to worthless idols forfeit the grace that could be theirs. But I, with a song of thanksgiving, will sacrifice to you. What I have vowed, I will make good. Salvation comes from the Lord." And the Lord commanded the fish, and it vomited Jonah onto dry land.
Thank you for the opportunity to share the Word of God this evening. Last month, Steve preached on Jonah chapter 1, and we last saw Jonah hurtling towards the murky depths of the Mediterranean Sea, as Gregory so poetically put it this morning. So this evening we find out what happened to Jonah from there. After the sailors threw him overboard, what happened next? Now the Lord provided a huge fish to swallow Jonah, and Jonah was in the belly of the fish 3 days and three nights. From inside the fish, Jonah prayed to the Lord his God. Did it really happen? A Google search gives little credence to the idea that a man could survive inside a fish. And in this age of enlightenment and 21st century scientific knowledge, you kind of think, well, is it just a Sunday school story? Could it really happen? Scientifically, I'm told, whales have very narrow throats, and a man couldn't pass down the throat of a whale, except for one, the sperm whale, apparently has a gigantic throat and regularly feeds on giant squid, which obviously are much bigger than men. So maybe it was a sperm whale that swallowed Jonah. But then scientists tell us, obviously, a sperm whale swallows giant squid to digest them, and a man wouldn't easily survive the digestive juices in the stomach. And even if the digestive juices weren't there, the gases there are not oxygen. So he wouldn't be able to breathe. So if he didn't get digested, he would suffocate. And the more you read scientifically, the more you think, well, what do we do with this story then? Is it a myth? Did Jonah make it up? Did he insert it to make himself look like a hero when actually he was a bit of a rogue? If we get rid of it, if we say, no, it can't have happened, and so therefore it didn't happen, well, then what do we do with Isaac being conceived when Sarah was 90? What do we do with the Nile turning to blood? What about the waters of the Red Sea being split down the middle? What about the walls of Jericho? Or Elijah on Mount Carmel? What about Sennacherib's 185,000 men that got destroyed by one angel in one night? What about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? Did they come out of the furnace without their clothes even being singed? What about the virgin birth? What about the resurrection? If we say Jonah's just a fairy tale or a myth or a Sunday school story and it's nice for children, but when we grow up we have to leave that aside, then which other pages of the Bible do we have to tear out? And I think a humbler position is to say the God who created the whole world can do what he likes with it, including bending its rules. And when God bends the rules, we call that working a miracle. And I actually think that this was one of God's more inventive miracles. And I can almost imagine him kind of giving a wink at the fish, saying, go on, you know, now's the time. So if it happened, and I believe it happened, you know, my scientific brain went in a few directions over the past couple of weeks, thinking, well, what might have happened? And I came up with some ideas. If the whale's throat is too narrow, did Jonah actually get to the stomach, or did the whale or big fish, and I'm kind of going to use those words interchangeably, did it hold Jonah in its mouth? Because we do hear of fish in times of danger that will take their own young into their mouths and hide them from a time of danger until the danger has passed. So I thought, well, maybe God put a very big protective instinct in this fish. It said, go on, get your jaws around that one. You have a bit of a problem, though, because obviously the mouth would be full of water, not air. So God would also have to say, and while you're at it, come up to the surface, take a big gulp of air, because this guy needs to breathe air, not water. But, you know, maybe. Maybe, miraculously, God provided the fish and miraculously turned off the stomach juices. Every week, I write prescriptions for a tablet called omeprazole, and people who take those tablets turn off the acid in their stomach. And I think God's pretty big, and he could probably turn off the acid without my prescription. So perhaps, you know, in providing the fish, he also just changed the stomach atmosphere. Or perhaps, and I've come across this one in the commentaries, perhaps it wasn't a fish and it wasn't a whale. Perhaps it was some enormous sea creature, maybe even something that doesn't exist anymore, maybe something that's gone extinct. The Bible speaks of the Leviathan, which was a very, very scary big sea monster. And one of the commentators said that to the people in antiquity reading this, part of the story, part of the lesson, part of what it would mean to them would be that God is in charge of those great big scary sea monsters that you fear so much. So maybe it was some creature and we don't even know what it was. We need to remember that the book of Jonah wasn't written as a textbook in whale anatomy or fish physiology. And fish physiology. But we don't need to throw out the entire story just because we can't quite get our head around how might God have done it. And in fact, the more I thought about this, the more I thought probably Jonah didn't quite know what had happened to him. Because put yourself, not literally, but mentally, in his position for one moment and think. He's going towards the bottom of the Mediterranean Sea. He's drowning. He's probably at best semi-conscious, maybe completely unconscious at the time that the fish actually swallows him. When he comes to, he probably, and the prayer that he prayed bears this out, he probably thought he was in the world of the dead. And it would have taken a little while for him to realise, no, actually, I'm still alive. And then he'd have become aware, first of all, he'd have known it was dark. Well, that's okay. He probably thought the world of the dead was dark. That wouldn't have woken him up to what's going on. But then he'd have become aware of movement, vibrations, maybe the sound of this big heartbeat, whoom, 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 smells, textures, maybe something, some kind of movement like this that tells him that he's in the water. And little by little, it would dawn on him that not only is he still alive, but something miraculous has happened. But he wouldn't quite know what it was. He wouldn't quite be able to understand it. And then, 3 days later, he's ejected onto dry land. He lands on the sand. He picks himself up. He rubs himself down. He looks out to sea. And there's this enormous thing swimming out into the deep water, which is where it belongs, because it doesn't belong in the shallows. And even at that stage, you know, he doesn't get out a pair of binoculars. Oh, I wonder what that was. His thinking and his prayer is all full of gratitude to God that his life has been saved and that he's been given a second chance. It's not, oh, I wonder how he did that. So I don't think we need to get too hung up on the details. God did it. He did it miraculously. We'll never quite know how, but God did it. And that's a principle, I think, when we come to any miracle in the Bible. We can't explain them. By very nature, we can't explain them. We don't have to throw the whole lot out and say, well, it didn't happen because it couldn't have. Let's look at his prayer. I've split this into three parts. First of all, Jonah prayed in desperation. In my distress, I called to the Lord and he answered me. From deep in the realm of the dead, I called for help, and you listened to my cry. When Steve preached on chapter 1, he pointed out that Jonah's not recorded as having prayed during that whole episode on the ship. Perhaps the sailors prayed, and the sailors begged Jonah to pray, but we are not told that he prayed. And maybe he was too ashamed, and maybe he was too afraid, because he knew he was running away from God. But now he has nothing to lose, and he prays. And he was utterly desperate. He really thought his end had come. Verse 3, you hurled me into the depths, into the very heart of the seas, and the currents swirled about me. All your waves and breakers swept over me. Verse 5, the engulfing waters were at my throat. The deep surrounded me. Seaweed was wrapped around my head. To the roots of the mountains I sank down. The earth beneath barred me in forever. Verse 7, when my life was ebbing away, I remembered you, Lord. Jonah was drowning. He was utterly terrified. He speaks of his life ebbing away. He speaks of the earth beneath barring him in forever. And now I didn't get that because I thought, hang on, he's going down, 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 and he hits the bottom. The earth beneath has barred him out, not barred him in. But the commentators said no. He's talking about the underworld, the land beneath, Sheol, the land of the dead. And he doesn't see himself coming out of this alive. He sees himself as being barred in to the world of the dead. He's utterly hopeless. He's utterly desperate. He doesn't think there's a way out. And yet, even in his desperation, he prays in faith. Verse 4 says, I said, I have been banished from your sight, yet I will look again toward your holy temple. And to me, this is the most moving part of the prayer. Hours previously, Jonah had wanted to get away from God. Jonah actively tried to get out of God's sight. And now he recognizes, I have got what I wanted, and I'm in the worst place I could possibly be. Banished from God's sight. And it's his sin and his disobedience that's put him in that place, far from God's presence. But far from God's presence, he says this, I will look again toward your holy temple. What does that mean? It means I will seek your face, because the temple was the focus of the people of God. That's where God had said he'd put his name, and the people prayed towards the temple. So in utter darkness and blackness and bleakness, Jonah says, I will look again towards your temple. I will seek your face. Again, when I first read it kind of quickly, I read it as, I will look again upon your holy temple. And I thought he was saying, you're going to get me out of this, and I'm going to stand in Jerusalem again. I'm going to see that building again. But it doesn't say that. It says, I will look towards. And I think when Jonah was first swallowed by the whale or whatever creature it was, and he first came to, I'm not sure that he knew at that point that God actually was giving him a second chance to obey. But he recognises that God has been merciful enough to give him a second chance to sort out his own relationship with him. And so he seeks God's face. As you read through the prayer, it's also remarkable, and I haven't got time to look at the parallels, but it's remarkable how many themes and how many phrases from the other Psalms come in to Jonah's prayer. And I think he had hidden God's word in his heart. Now, obviously, to the Jews, the Psalms were their hymn book. So he knew his hymns really, really well. And in this time of darkness, they sustained him. And we're told to hide God's word in our heart, because when we're in a dark place, that's the light that points us back to the Lord. So he prayed in desperation, and he prayed in faith, and he prayed in expectation. Second half of verse 7, my prayer rose to you, to your holy temple. Those who cling to worthless idols turn away from God's love for them, but I, with shouts of grateful praise, will sacrifice to you. What I have vowed, I will make good. I will say, salvation comes from the Lord. So Jonah's prayer starts in desperation but ends in hope. and it ends in praise, and it ends with a promise to make good what he has vowed. Many commentators say that this bit was prayed once he was back on dry land, and that may well be. But when I preached on Hannah, I said, faith is hanging on to what God has said, even when the evidence takes time to catch up. And I think it's also possible that that's what's happened here. Even while he's in the fish, he has this sense, God has heard me. And even though he doesn't see the full extent of his restoration, either literally or physically, he knows God has heard him. And even then, he says, I will praise you and I will make good my sacrifices to you. Whichever way, whether he prayed that bit in the fish or on land, by the end, he's confident of God's love and God's salvation. And he wants to make his life count for God. And really, that's the only fitting response, isn't it? When we recognise what God has done in our lives, his grace, his salvation, his intervention, the only fitting response is to worship him and to want to give our lives back to him. But before I finish, I have a very fundamental question. And it's the question, why? Why did this happen? Why did God bother to rescue Jonah? Why didn't God just say, okay, have it your way and find somebody else to go and preach to the Ninevites? And I thought about this. And to be honest, I've never thought about this before. I don't think I've ever heard a sermon on Jonah chapter 2. So I've never given this much thought till I had to prepare for tonight. Why did God rescue Jonah? And I think there are at least two answers, and you might come up with more. But I think the first one is, we are all unique. God has prepared a life of good works for each one of us. If I don't live my life in humble obedience before God, none of you can do that for me. You can only live your life. And for reasons only known to God, he had picked Jonah to go to Nineveh, and nobody else would do. It was Jonah's mission. But secondly, and I think far more powerfully, it shows the extent of God's grace. And that's why I asked to have the VeggieTales movie, because I actually think, okay, leave aside the angels and the ship inside the whale and all of that. But I think actually the VeggieTales song has got it right. The whole message of Jonah condensed down to one thought is, he is the God of second chances. And not only was he prepared to give the Ninevites, who didn't know any better, a second chance, but he was willing to give Jonah, who jolly well should have known better, a second chance. And this is really good news, because it means however badly we blow it, we're never beyond the reach of God's grace. Jonah actively tried to get away from God, thinking that God was a hard taskmaster. But God pursued him. Jill prayed, your goodness and love follow me. And if ever there was a man who was followed, pursued, chased by the goodness and the grace and the mercy and the love of God, it was Jonah. Even when he tried to run away, God chased him with love and goodness. Jonah ran from a hard taskmaster, but he returned to a merciful God of salvation. And when we return and we seek his face, we are never beyond the reach of his grace. But there's a counter-argument to that, isn't there? And there often is. Because he could have saved himself all the trouble. He could have gone to Nineveh in the first place, and he didn't have to go to the bottom of the Mediterranean Sea to find out how good God was. So sin always has consequences. Disobedience always has consequences. But even when we mess it up, there's always a way back. God's grace is outrageous, and it's without limits. When we seek his face, as Jonah found, there's always a way back. So thank you very much. And next month, Steve Whitehorn will take us on the next bit of the journey, and we'll find out, did Jonah fulfil his promise, and what happened next?